This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
In the 1920 federal census, it shows a 31-year-old portrait artist, William R. Steen, and his young family living in Prairie Township of Fayetteville.
Yesterday, Sue Thompson, the state regent for the Arkansas Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, addressed about 50 fifth graders from Root Elementary School in Fayetteville. They were seated on the floor of Washington County's historic old courthouse. She was at a podium between them and a large mural placed inside the courthouse walls nearly 90 years ago. Yesterday, as part of a week-long rededication of the recently refurbished building, the mural was honored with a new, cleaned-up look revealed. Sue Thompson told the 10 and 11-year-olds about the artist and his work.
The central figure is the Angel of Victory. She is holding tablets etched with the names of the servicemen from Washington County who died during World War I. The figures to her right, your left.
The mural, painted by William Steen, depicts seven men on the left of the angel and seven more on the right. To the right are famous explorers of North America, an American Indian, Columbus, DeSoto included. On the other side are soldiers from six American wars, including an infantryman and sailor from the last war the country had been involved in before the mural's completion, the Great War, World War I. The names of 56 men are also listed on the mural, men from Washington County who went into the service for the war and never came back. Lenita McKinney, regent of the Marion chapter, that is the Fayetteville chapter of the DAR, says not much is known about many of those 56 men whose names have been on the courthouse wall since 1921.
As a matter of fact, we even think that there could be some name, maybe the same person. We're not exactly sure. The ladies of the chapter did some research back at the time, and I do have limited sketching about what those are, like I said, mostly of where they're from. From what they pulled out, I can tell where they were from and all of them around in the county area. There is possibly one gentleman that was not from one county, but he had ties to someone, I think maybe a mother, that was living here in Washington County, so he got included.
The Marion chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution has a long connection with the mural. The chapter attended the first unveiling of Steen's work in July 1921 at the nearby Ozark Theater, the members all dressed in white. In 1976, to mark the country's bicentennial, the chapter helped raise money for a restoration and cleaning of the mural. And yesterday, the chapter presented a check to help pay for the latest cleaning.
It is my honor, Judge Edwards, if you would please come up. Our Marion chapter, Daughters of the American Revolution, has raised $3,300 towards the cleaning efforts of this mural, and we would like to present this check to you, Judge Edwards, and thank you for all of the work that the county has done.
Rick Parker of Gentry led the latest renovation project. He's previously worked on restorations on items from the White House, Mount Vernon, the Hermitage, the Biltmore, and objects from private presidential collections. He says he began this project by taking samples from Steen's mural no wider nor longer than a human hair and placing those samples under a microscope. Those small pieces reveal what the original artist put on the canvas and what has been added and removed since. He says when it comes time to do the actual cleaning of the work, he wants to keep his literal and figurative fingerprints off the painting.
Always keep that in the back of your mind. I'm very conscious about I don't want anything I do to be permanently attached to this. I don't want my artwork to be seen over Mr. Steen's. So I use reversible materials. Nothing that that I cleaned with or put on this is anything that's permanently attached. And we were talking about how to clean this later. It's a very easy thing to clean off the dirt and debris that will accumulate on this without getting back to the original paint.
Parker, a sixth-generation Arkansan, says credit is owed to Washington County for its commitment to this piece of public art. While hundreds of post offices, courthouses, and other taxpayer-built structures had portraits and public murals decades ago, neglect and demolition have claimed many of those works.
We were just talking about this a few minutes ago, that Washington County has really got to pat itself on the back for this one. This is a treasure, and this is done the way they should be done. There are far, far too many across the country that people have cut way too many corners on, and they're just atrocious. And to me, it does a disservice to the people that have died, and just to see these things let go or treated without the respect that they really need to have.
When William Steen's mural was first presented to the public on July 5th, 1921, at the Ozark Theater, there was a standing room only size crowd, according to newspaper accounts. Lenita McKinney of the Marion chapter of the DAR says she's allowed herself to imagine what that day must have looked like in downtown Fayetteville.
I've imagined what it would kind of be because I went to the Ozark Theater as a little girl. I saw a few movies in there, and I could only imagine it being packed full with people trying to see this very piece of art. As I understand from what I've heard, they mandatorily closed down the town and said, go to it. This was, you know, something the whole town to honor. Because it back then, it was such a huge deal. I mean, you know, what our troops in Afghanistan and Iraq are going through now, this was what they were living, the people they were seeing, their men, husbands, fathers.
As for the artist, it's known that William Steen had a studio for a time on the south side of the Fayetteville Square, that he was born in 1888 in Syracuse and died 77 years later in Mississippi, and is perhaps best known, outside of this area, for a portrait of President Franklin Roosevelt. Yesterday, this was all pretty much new information to Rick Parker, the man in charge of the restoration. That's by design, he says. He wants to learn about the artist after he's worked on the actual science of the restoration.
I try not to before I do work because I'm dealing with the actual physical property here. The stories behind it and what he intended, that's for another area of the field. I'm looking at very specifically pigments he used, varnishes he used, techniques that were used, things that I really need to look for that are fragile. Her face, for example, those red cheeks, there's a wonderful layering of colors in there that I was very concerned, knew would be fragile and wanted to be very careful with. So I'm more interested in the technical things. Now that this is all said and done, I learned today for the first time, kept looking at these names, who are these guys? Are these court members? Are they community members? Didn't know until today that these were gentlemen that had, you know, given their life.
Yesterday was a celebration of public art, but the mural, completed about 2 years after so many people had died in the largest war up to that time, is a solemn work. One can imagine and extend the line of veterans of wars on the left side of the painting to include young men and women dressed in uniforms of World War II, the Korean and Vietnamese wars, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and other conflicts since 1921, and understand far more names are or could be on walls and monuments around the world. The official ceremony yesterday ended with a rendition of Taps as a nod to that fact. William Steen's now-restored mural, first unveiled in July 1921, can be seen inside the historic Washington County Courthouse on College Avenue in downtown Fayetteville. An official reopening of the entire courthouse is scheduled for Saturday, beginning at 9 a.m. This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow night, the third annual Chefs in the Garden will take place at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks. There will be music provided by Ultra Suede, and many area restaurants will bring their dishes for people to eat while they stroll around the gardens. One of the restaurants participating in Chefs in the Garden is Café Rue Orleans. And late last week, our reporter, Ithi Igbinohotri-Madolker, went to Café Rue Orleans to get a sneak preview of what we'll be able to taste at the Botanical Gardens tomorrow night.
And what I start off with is a little hot oil. A little handful of chopped onions. About a teaspoon of chopped garlic. We're just going to saute it till it starts to stick a little bit.
Marty Schmidt turns the fire on and heats some liquid butter, a mixture of cooking oil and butter, in a saute pan. She's making Cajun-style shrimp primavera.
I'm going to add a nice handful of chopped veggies. And I'm using today zucchini, carrots, squash, red bell pepper. And I'm going to throw a couple of artichoke hearts in there today. This is when you need smell-o-vision, because it's smelling good.
Born and raised in New Orleans and having lived in Lafayette, Louisiana until her retirement in the year 2000, Maudy opened Cafe Rue Orleans, a restaurant that exclusively serves all things Cajun, in 2001. The restaurant is on North College Avenue, right across the Veterans Memorial Hospital in Fayetteville.
I'm going to add a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, and a little bit of... We use Paul Prudhomme's. It's a Redfish Magic is the spice that we use pretty much as a basic. It's kind of our salt and pepper, or I guess you could call it a Cajun spice.
Maudy says she's a cook at heart, not really a chef. Her focus on simple but great-tasting food is evident in her cooking technique. She focuses on the right ingredients, colors, sounds, and of course, the smell.
And then what I'll do is I'll take a little bit of white wine, and I like to use whatever the heck I'm drinking. White wine's pretty good, especially for vegetables, because it's not going to change the color. Now I'm going to add a few little baby shrimp. They're peeled baby shrimp.
Some people may confuse Cajun cooking with Creole cooking, but there is a big difference. Cajun food is low, slow cooking in big pots, while Creole cooking has a lot of Italian, African, Caribbean, and French influence. For now, the Cajun-style shrimp primavera is starting to look good.
Now's the time to add some pasta. This is just a cooked rotini noodle. A good handful. And because we have the wine and we have all the oil in there already, just simmering with the seasoning, it makes a little gravy. All right. As we say in the kitchen, we're ready to plate.
The shrimp primavera tastes heavenly with just the right blend of Cajun spices. But did she have to go easy on the spices a little bit in Northwest Arkansas?
Sure, a little bit. I mean, I'm not a real spicy, heavy spicy person. I like things to be seasoned. But I can season with black pepper, white pepper, red pepper, and salt. I have plenty of hot sauces and different types of hot sauces because I love collecting those things to give to people when they want something spicy, from habanero to a really mild jalapeno. But I think that, you know, as far as having to adapt, you can't really change your recipes too much because then they're not authentic.
With employers such as Walmart, Tyson, and Procter & Gamble in the area, many people from southern Louisiana come looking for authentic Cajun food. According to Maudy, authentic ingredients make authentic food, so she gets all hers from places such as New Orleans, Lafayette, and New Iberia in Louisiana.
If we look at our menu, you can see that we do have a catfish chapatula set dish I was talking about earlier with my mom being raised on Chapatula Street. It's a catfish fillet. We butterfly it and we stuff it with a crab cake, and then we top it with a seafood cream sauce. Also, the eggplant Napoleon is a signature dish. We have, of course, we have traditional red beans and rice, and we also have chicken and andouille gumbo. We have crawfish corn bisque. I guess another signature would be the Bayou Boat. It serves two to three people, and it has crawfish and crab cakes and catfish and shrimp and fries and bread.
Some of the dishes on her menu will also be a part of the menu for the Chefs in the Garden event being held in the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks this Thursday.
We're going to do a Bourbon Street chicken, which is on my menu, and we'll just slice it for people so they can eat it very easily. I'm going to stuff, it's going to be called pork on pork. I'm going to stuff a pork loin with tasso, which is pork, bacon, and sausage, and I'm going to roll it up and tie it off and then roast it, and we'll slice that up and be real good. And then the other thing I'm going to bring is baked macaroni. And this is, it's not like, you know, macaroni and cheese. This is like real, you know, cheesy macaroni. We use a penne pasta, and people love it.
For now, the patrons keep flowing in, asking for their fill of gumbo, jambalaya, etouffee, or desserts such as beignets, white chocolate bread pudding, or crème brûlée. Body and her crew keep busy.
That's my phone. This is Marty.
For Zox at Large, this is Iti Agnihotri Mudolkar.
This is Ozarks at Large on KUAF 91.3 FM. Still ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, more from last week's debate between Congressman John Bozeman and Senator Blanche Lincoln. Today, a discussion about health care and the plan passed by Congress earlier this year. That conversation between the candidates ahead on Ozarks at Large. Plus, the day in history, Becca Bacon-Martin has some suggestions for the middle of the week and more. Theater Squared has extended its run of Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps until Sunday, September 26th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. This comedy thriller, just off its Broadway run, features an onstage plane crash, romance, and a death-defying finale. Tickets and more information available at theater2.org or 571-2728. And KUAF and Harvest Music Festival invite you to register for the Harvest Music Festival Getaway Giveaway. One lucky winner will receive 2 3-day passes plus general camping at the Harvest Music Festival October 14th through the 16th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark, Arkansas. This outdoor event includes over 50 live performances plus camping, hiking, and children's activities. Bands include Leftover Salmon, Keller Williams and the Keels, Sam Bush, and many more. The drawing takes place Friday, September 24th during Film Score Friday with PJ Hrabowski. You can visit KUAF.com and click on Contest to enter the drawing. Please, just one entry per person. Thanks and good luck. And this reminder, a music drive to collect jazz records for KUAF's Jazz Library is now underway. 12-inch vinyl jazz LPs in fair to good condition may be donated to KUAF at our studios at 9 South School across from the Fayetteville Public Library. Then, every Friday night at midnight, tune in to Goodnight Jazz with Daniel Estes as he's gone only vinyl on his one-hour weekly jazz program. For more information, or if you'd like to schedule a local pickup of records, call KUAF at 575-5823 or 800-522-KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. This week on the air and at our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com, we're listening to portions of the debate between Senator Blanche Lincoln and Congressman John Bozeman held last week at the Peabody Hotel in downtown Little Rock. Bozeman, a Republican congressman from the 3rd District, is challenging Lincoln. She's seeking a third term in the U.S. Senate. So far this week, we've heard answers to questions asked by the 4 members on the journalist panel. But the second half of the debate allowed the candidates to ask questions to each other. The idea, developed by debate organizer Roby Brock, was an attempt to have the Democrat and Republican engage in a discussion about the issues. On this edition of Ozarks, a question asked by John Bozeman to Blanche Lincoln, her response, and the following conversation about health care. It was one of the most spirited exchanges of the afternoon.
I think, Senator Lincoln, knowing as you do now that there's almost universal discontent, almost universal opposition to the health care bill, the Obamacare that was passed, would you still cast the deciding vote for Obamacare?
You know, for 3 decades, we have been working hard to reform health care in this country. And certainly for the last, I think, 10 years, we have been looking at ways that we can do a better job with the delivery of health care. We have the greatest doctors and nurses, research and hospitals in the world, but the logistics of our delivery system are broken, and we've got to change that. We've got to move from a system that reimburses for volume to one that reimburses for value. And I heard from people over these last 10 years, I have heard from people day in and day out from Arkansas, small businesses who said we cannot afford health care anymore. from single moms who said, my kid, I'm trying to put them through school. I can't keep them on my insurance anymore because they're over age. You're hearing from folks who get dumped from their health insurance because they get sick, or they can't get health insurance because of pre-existing condition. Well, let me tell you, the four things that I went in there to work hard to make change. One, people told me they wanted no government health care, and I stopped it. I did not support the public option, and I stopped that government health care. Small businesses told me they needed help, and what did I do? I worked hard to bring about a plan that would actually have allow them to have access to the same kind of health care that you and I have. And I think that's going to be great for small businesses. They wanted me to protect Medicare, and that's exactly what we did. We added 12 years of solvency to the Medicare Trust Fund. We're going to create greater efficiencies in Medicare so that people in Arkansas will get the full benefit that seniors in other parts of the country are getting a more lucrative benefit. People are guaranteed under this law the core Medicare benefit, 100% of that core benefit. People wanted insurance reform, and that's exactly what we've got in this bill. We've got making sure that people cannot get dropped from their plans, that they cannot be denied because of pre-existing condition. The fact is, this is a complicated issue. This is not a perfect bill. It's going to take us time. I'm one of the only Democrats that's a co-sponsor of Senator Johann's amendment to repeal the 1099 piece on small businesses. Where there are places to correct in this bill, I will, and work hard to make it better. But the fact is, in hearing from Arkansans, there were a lot of things that we needed to do, and I think we've gotten started on it.
Congressman Bozeman, you may respond to that.
The only thing I would say is that I was in Congress also listening to the will of the people of Arkansas. The calls that I got were probably 99-1 against this bill because seniors figured out immediately that you couldn't cut $500 billion from Medicare, add 30% more patients. Something had to give, and that's the quality of care. Small business figured out that the mandates that are going to come down on them. I was with a manufacturer in Fort Smith last week or a couple weeks ago. He told me that this bill would cost them $2 million. They can't afford that. They're looking to lay off 50 people. They will take and mechanize. And the sad thing about that is those jobs will never come back. Restaurant owner, many restaurants, 900 people. He said in 2014 this bill will cost them $1 million a year. They're not making that kind of money now. And as a result, he doesn't know if his company will survive. This bill is a job killer. And the sad thing is we're spending $1.5 trillion. There's absolutely nothing in this bill to control costs. And so the state of Arkansas, Governor Beebe tells us that it's going to cost us $200 million a year with the mandate that we're going to have to expand Medicaid. Where's that money going to come from? The state doesn't have it. Is it going to come out of schools? Is it going to come out of roads? Much of it probably will come out of provider pay, which, again, is decreased quality of care. So I agree. Pre-existing conditions, the idea that you lose your job and you lose your insurance is wrong. We need to solve those problems. But this bill is not the right approach. This bill is a bad bill. It's a job killer. And I think overwhelmingly we're seeing that not only in Arkansas, but throughout the country.
I'll give you both an opportunity to respond.
Okay, great. You know, if you're a small business of 50 or less, you're exempt from any mandates. And I think that's really important when you look at the number of small businesses across our state and where they lie. Medicare is absolutely strengthened in this bill. There is no doubt all of the estimates have shown us that we add 12 years of longevity and solvency to the Medicare Trust Fund. The fact is what we do is equalize. Right now, our seniors and you and I are subsidizing Medicare patients in other states to get a more lucrative benefit than Arkansans do under Medicare. And so what we do is remove that and create a greater balance among all Medicare beneficiaries across the nation. And I think it's important to fight for those tax dollars for Arkansans, that they get their fair share and that it doesn't go to subsidize other seniors in other states. There's $132 billion worth of deficit reduction in the first 10 years and $1 trillion worth of deficit reduction in the second 10 years of this bill. Medicaid is paid for. We worked hard to make sure that the states would agree with us and work with us. The first 5 years of the Medicaid expansion is 100% paid for by the federal government. And the second 5 years of the Medicaid expansion, 99% of that is paid for by the federal government. I would just simply ask, if we're not going to do something, we're just going to continue the status quo. Is that appropriate? Is it appropriate for us to continue on the road that we are on right now? I'm perfectly willing to look for solutions and to change the things in this complicated bill that may not be right. I've already stood up and been willing to do that. But the fact is doing nothing is going to strap our industries and our businesses. We now already pay twice as much as the other 26 industrialized nations we compete with in this world. And we just can't continue to create jobs and keep them in this country if we're going to spend 16 to 17% of our GDP on the cost of health care.
Congressman Bozeman, last word.
Well, I would just disagree in the sense that you know, certainly something needs to be done. But the idea that we've got to do something, and that's the solution, I think is what's wrong with government. We've got a bill that's thousands of pages. The regulators are going to come in, add many more. And instead of controlling cost, if anything, what we're seeing is cost soar, cost escalate. Now, don't ask me. Ask your employers what this is going to do to you as far as how the health care bill is going to affect your particular business. Evidently, Governor Beebe misspoke that it won't cost the state $200 million a year. I don't think that's true. I think it is going to cost the state $200 million. We're going to have to come up with that money at some point. Ask your rural hospital administrator what this bill is going to do to you. What's going to happen is that businesses very quickly are going to figure out it's cheaper to pay the government fine. They'll move their people into the government subsidized program. Cost will soar. And as a result of that, you got to control cost. You do that through consolidation. You do it through rationing. You can look at our VA system. We got two great VA hospitals. I'm on the VA committee. I work hard to make sure they're that way. But we've only got two. And as this thing goes forward and costs do soar, every community is not going to have a hospital. We're going to lose a lot of community hospitals. And again, don't ask me, Senator Lincoln. Ask your community hospital administrators, and they'll tell you that that's the facts. The problem is, you lose your community hospital. Those are the best-paying jobs in town. You lose your doctors. That's the first thing that retirees and businesses look at when they're going to settle. And pretty soon you lose your community.
Congressman John Bozeman and Senator Blanche Lincoln at last week's debate in Little Rock. Tomorrow, another question and the answers from that debate. And you can hear more questions, answers, and discussion from the debate each day this week at OzarksAtLarge.com. The debate was organized and moderated by Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net. Support for Roby Brock's coverage of Arkansas business and politics is provided by Hendricks College, a residential undergraduate liberal arts college. Learn more at Hendricks.edu/odyssey. And the Little Rock National Airport at fly-lit.com, where travelers can book air, car, and hotel reservations online, track flights, and check the weather. Mobile phone access is also available at fly-lit.com/mobile. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com.
American jazz musician Cannonball Adderley was born on this date in 1928 in Tampa, Florida. Adderley could play several instruments, but is best known for his work on alto saxophone. The musician was known for an improvisational style that featured restless, highly decorated, often florid lines, emphatic blues harmonies, and a full, rich tone. The son of a jazz cornetist, Adderley directed a high school band, studied at the U.S. Navy School of Music, and led two army bands before moving to New York City in the mid-1950s. In the summer of 1955, Adderley attracted attention within New York jazz circles, garnering rave reviews for his performances with bassist Oscar Pettiford at the Cafe Bohemia. Soon after, he formed a quintet with his brother that met with little success, although recordings made by the group received considerable praise years later. In 1957, Adderley began an 18-month stint with trumpeter Miles Davis. Adderley was prominently featured on Davis's albums Milestones and Kind of Blue, both considered benchmarks of 1950s hard bop and modal jazz. Also significant was Something Else, a classic album released under Adderley's own name, on which Davis was a guest player. In 1959, Adderley again joined with his brother to form a quintet, this time successfully, and he continued to lead popular small groups for the remainder of his career. Adderley's quintet released popular recordings such as this here, Work Song, Mercy, 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 and Jive Samba. On this date in 1981, Mary Celestia Parler died, less than a year after her husband, noted Ozark folklore collector Vance Randolph, passed away. Parler was responsible for developing and implementing the most extensive folklore research project in Arkansas history. She was a professor of English and folklore at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Through her vast knowledge and appreciation of Arkansas culture, she enabled future generations to get a glimpse of Arkansas's cultural history, much of which remains only in the stories, songs, and images she collected with the help of her students and assistants. The work of Parler was revisited in 2005 when the University Library's Special Collections Department hosted a two-day conference called A Collector in Her Own Right, reassessing Mary Celestia Parler's contribution to Ozark folklore. On this date in 1821, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and El Salvador all became independent from Spain. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Wednesday. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And you know, we were talking earlier that the marathon of fall events has taken off.
I mean, festivals, speakers on campuses, just plays, everyone's going full
tilt.
The
little bit of lull that we have for summer when people are outside doing fun things are now inside doing fun things. Tonight, a Native American rock art talk.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, I'm glad I don't have to say that twice. Featuring Dr. George Sabo, professor of anthropology at the University of Arkansas, happens right now. Right this minute, noon, at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale.
For the encore show, you've missed it.
Yeah, sorry. The Benji Davis Project is tonight at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
What time does that begin?
That begins at 9 o'clock. You haven't missed it.
For the encore show, you have not missed that.
I got to think earlier. That's it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's enough.
We're done.
All right. Becca Bacon-Martin is editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspaper. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Arkansas Supreme Court is now streaming its proceedings online for the public to view, even if they can't attend oral arguments in person. Arguments on cases appealed to the Supreme Court are usually made every Thursday. Chief Justice Jim Hanna says the High Court has taken the lead in urging the state's judiciary to make its workings more accessible to the public.
The judicial branch of government, as judges, we couldn't function and operate unless we had the trust and the confidence of the people. And you build that trust and confidence by what people observe in their courts. And in this way, the people can actually watch and see how their courts are working.
Chief Justice Hanna says up until now, citizens who wanted to hear the court arguments had to be present in the court.
We do about every time we have oral argument, we have classes, elementary students, high school students, and of course college students and law students. And we think that's very important. That's the best way that people can learn how their government works. And this way, not everybody can come to Little Rock. And in any place in the state, if they've got access to the internet, they can watch us and watch their court and how they work.
Startup costs ran about $100,000 a year, and the ongoing cost will be about $20,000 a year. Governor Mike Beebe says Arkansas will be able to make use of millions of dollars in education aid from the federal government for capital projects. The $91 million bound for Arkansas was part of a package intended to save teachers' jobs. But the governor had expressed concern that Arkansas would be hamstrung because the state hasn't cut back its own education funding.
Which created a dilemma. So I've talked to the secretary, and he has indicated to us that we can use their money for salaries and our money for capital. In other words, just substitute it. Do in the back door what they said you couldn't do in the front door. I was uncomfortable with that. So we're getting that in writing.
The governor says he's urging the school districts to use the freed up funds only for one-time projects like construction, equipment, or summer programs. And a group of experts on autism spectrum disorders will gather at the governor's mansion today to discuss the latest findings on the disabilities and methods for treating them. The forum, sponsored by UAMS, includes doctors and advocates who can help guide parents dealing with autism. Pat Hayes is the mother of two boys who've been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. She says the obstacles are numerous and complex.
Treating it is very expensive. There are a number of treatments and therapies that insurance does not pay for many of them. Issues with child care, because it's very difficult to find someone to watch your children. And then, to me, the biggest one is once you get in the public school system, because you have to make sure your child is appropriately educated.
That forum began today at the Governor's Mansion in Little Rock. If you've never heard of Zumba, you'll have quite a chance this weekend to be introduced to the fitness regimen. There's a Zumbathon coming for a good cause. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this report.
Zumba Fitness has partnered with Susan G. Komen for The Cure to launch Party in Pink. Through Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, groups around the country are participating in this initiative by hosting Zumbathons. Zumba instructor Natalia Pizarro will lead a Zumbathon Friday night at the Fayetteville Athletic Club.
Zumba Fitness is a Latin dance fitness program. It incorporates merengue, salsa, reggaeton, a lot of different Latin and international rhythms in a very like party-style atmosphere, but it's like a workout. So a Zumbathon is pretty much doing that. It's like a party where you are going to dance. You have instructors on stage guiding you through the different music. And it's going to be a three-hour event. So that's what it's called, a Zumbathon, because it's long and you're going to need to have, you know, be well hydrated and eat well beforehand. And it's just like a marathon, but dancing.
Pizarro is one of four instructors leading the event, which will feature healthy snacks, drinks, and prizes. The idea to organize a Zumbathon occurred when Pizarro was contacted by a member of the local Komen affiliate.
They were wanting to create awareness, especially in the Hispanic community. So she thought that maybe through Zumba we could do something. And it just happened that I was really wanting to do a Zumbathon for a good cause. And Zumba partnered with Susan G. Komen for The Cure at national level. And they are sponsoring Zumbathons all around the U.S. until October 31st. So it just was like a perfect timing to do it.
In addition to being a good workout, the Zumbathon will also help raise money for breast cancer research.
Well, I think people should come because we are supporting a very good cause. Every year, around 40,000 people die of breast cancer in the U.S., and around 2,000 of them are men, and many people don't know that men do get breast cancer. So this is a good time to support this horrible illness and try to find a cure for it. So what a better way to do it than dancing for a cure.
The Zumbathon is open to the public, and admission is $20. Registration begins at 6 o'clock, and dancing begins at 6:30. Participants will receive a goodie bag. More information is available by sending an email to Nati Pizarro, that's N-A-T-I-P-I-Z-A-R-R-O, at yahoo.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
They'll try again tonight in Springdale to have Game 1 of the Texas League Championships between the Northwest Arkansas Naturals and the Midland Rockhounds. They couldn't play the game last night because the field was in no condition after torrential rains. Game 1 tonight, scheduled, weather permitting, to begin at 7 o'clock at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Game 2 will be played Thursday, tomorrow in Springdale. The rest of the best of five series would move to Midland. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals advanced to the Texas League Championship after defeating the Springfield Cardinals in Game 5 of the best of five North Division series on Monday night. This is Ozarks at Large. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. Ozark Natural Foods Fall Festival for members will be held on Sunday, September 26th, from 1 until 4 p.m. at Gully Park in Fayetteville. Food, games, prizes, a chef cook-off, and more will be offered. Festival and membership information are available at ozarknaturalfoods.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Hiwassee, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. Remember, you can listen at our website, KUAF.com. For classical music, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, tune in to KUAF HD2, available for free on your HD radio or online at KUAF.com. The Arkansas Trial Lawyers Association student chapter at the University of Arkansas School of Law is proud to host a special guest lecture by attorney James M. Bronham tomorrow night, or I should say tomorrow morning, from 11:30 until 1 in the E.J. Ball Courtroom. He practices entirely in the field of military law and represents soldiers charged with AWOL, desertion, and related offenses. The event, tomorrow morning from 11:30 until 1, is open to the general public. And Constitution Day will be celebrated Friday on the University of Arkansas Fort Smith campus. The guest speaker for that event, Janice F. Kearney, author, publisher, and former presidential diarist. The talk begins Friday morning at 10 in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center at UAFS. Kearney's appearance is through UA Fort Smith's chapter of the American Democracy Project, a national initiative designed to foster responsible citizenship at all levels. If you'd like more information, 788-7295. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF.